In this episode of the Fly Brother Radio Show, I chat with Luis Gramajo and Hans Schrey, co-founders of the Sunday Afternoon Project, a nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a sense of belonging through shared stories. Their journey in the United States started back in 2019 when they moved from their home country of Guatemala to Austin, Texas, and grew a farmer's market stand into an astounding $5 million business by 2021. Though they eventually left the company behind, the lessons they learned through it all planted the seed of what they found to be their purpose, to create a world of belonging where everyone gets to come as they are and a world of shared safe spaces. We talk about the lure of the American dream, homophobia in Guatemala and the United States, the need for everyone to feel like they have a safe space, the power of story sharing, and the beauty of travel, and much, much more. Let's fly with Luis and Hans of the Sunday Afternoon Project on the Fly Brother Radio Show, right after this. The Fly Brother Radio Show is brought to you by the Monterey Bay Aquarium, where you can experience the wonder beneath the waves and celebrate your connection to the ocean. Learn more about how you can protect the ocean that connects us all at montereybayaquarium.org/share your voice. And remember, that's Monterey with one R, not two. montereybayaquarium.org/share your voice.
Luis and Hans, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you both for just everything you do. Thank you, guys.
No, Ernest, thank you for having us. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Mm-hmm, of course. Well, so listen, you originally are from Guatemala, but you have made a life in the United States over the last few years, and it's been a roller coaster. But first, just travel, with that being the focus of everything we do, what are some of your earliest travel memories, and how did that influence your decision to move to the U.S.?
I remember getting lost at the airport the first time I traveled, going to Orlando to Disney, and I got lost, and I was like 5 years old, and somehow I ended up... It was really funny. I was having the time of my life. Like, I got lost because I ended up being on, like, on the, how do you call that? De la pista.
On the runway.
On the runway. Yeah. So it was super fun because I was looking at all these airplanes. I didn't even realize I was lost.
It was the 80s. Let's not forget.
It was in the 90s, you said.
No, 90s. No, it was, what's 80s? Yeah, so that was, I remember that, funny enough, I think that I remember that trip more because of that experience than going actually to Disneyland.
Okay, being lost on the runway at Orlando International Airport as a five-year-old.
No, at Guatemala, I was leaving. Yes. That's how the trip started with Luis. It's going to be a fun trip.
I think your parents knew early on that this young man was going far.
It was something for sure.
Yeah, it's always something like that.
Well,
for me, there was always like this smell. Yeah.
What about the smell, Hans?
That's how we start. There's always this smell and this weather that's very specific to traveling, like in November, because it's like end of the year vacation. But there's like these, like what you will call fall weather.
Okay.
When it's like the crisp air and it's like slightly cold, so you can wear a jacket or not. And there's that smell, kind of like a CVS. It's very specific because Guatemala doesn't smell like that, but the CVS always smell like that. And you're like, I feel like I'm on a trip, like I'm on vacation. Even now that we're in the U.S., we're like, oh, this Target smells like a vacation.
This Target smells like a vacation.
It's kind of weird because as a child, like, wow, Target. Even like the first time we were here, like we're living here, I remember very clearly, like we went to Target and Luis got deodorant. And he was coming to the shopping cart with like three deodorants, like, oh yeah, I'm bringing more. No. And you're like, why? Target is right here. We live here now. Like, you don't need to carry deodorant. Like, you can come back for more. And then it's like,
deodorant.
Like, it's very weird. Mm-hmm. It's always the weirdest thing.
It's in general. It's just that for us coming to America, and this happens to many people, I'm sure, that you, if you don't live in the States, like going to Target is one of the things that you get excited because you get like the all these things. Like, yeah, like the different smells of deodorant, for example, that we don't have in Latin America. So that's what, and you get a bunch because you know that you're going to get them again whenever you get back. So you get a lot of everything. It's a thing.
You go and get 3 bottles of cough syrup and you have like your cousin who asked you if you could get these specific band-aids that they don't sell in Guatemala. So it was like when you came back, it was like with this very weird stuff and it was super exciting. And even the candy, like for me, it was the candy. My dad used to travel a lot, so he would bring us candy all the time. And back then we didn't have that. I remember like Nutella was like a big deal back in the day. We only had it for Christmas. And kids nowadays have all of those things. I remember like getting excited about the dumbest like $5 thing because we didn't have that back then.
I think that's kind of sad that we lost it because of everything. Yeah. Because now everything is available everywhere. So you don't, like a lot of our friends, when they visit us now, it just happened like for Thanksgiving. Two of our really good friends came from Thanksgiving from Guatemala to spend it with us. And I asked them, like, is there something specific that you want to buy or something? And they were like, no, now I can get everything in Guatemala. So yeah, you don't get excited about that anymore.
It's a lot less fun. So we did take them to Costco and they were very excited.
Yeah. Is it because of the size of everything in Costco?
Of course.
That is.
Yes.
Like, the Costco in Guatemala is not called Costco, and you could see like 5 of them in a regular Costco. Like when we first came to the Costco here, like, oh my God, this feels like an airport.
Sure.
But there are many adjustments.
As large as a hangar, yes.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, what would have been the opportunities for coming to the United States when you were children growing up, or young people, you don't have to have been children, coming from Guatemala? Would it have been, as you started to say, Hans, the fact that your dad traveled? Would it have been your family vacations or school trips? Like, why was that? And I'm asking simply because for people who don't grow up outside the United States, they may not have a concept of why somebody would be traveling from a country, quote unquote, so far away, even though it's only a couple of hours by air from the U.S., for these particular reasons.
For me, it was always, I remember coming from a very young age, every summer, because our year, like our school year ends in September, October, mm-hmm. and then we go back in January.
Okay, so I remember January that to October, which is school year.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, that's our school year. But I remember that I have a lot of family here. So I used to spend my vacations here because I came and I went to school with my cousins. And it was to experience the culture, to perfection my English that I'm still working on. And it's like, that's going to be forever. I don't want to lose my accent, though. I think it helps.
Character, sabor.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you go to Disney World this time of the year, I can guarantee, like if you're Guatemala and you go to Disney World right now, from here until the end of December, I can you'll guarantee that you're going to run into someone from Guatemala.
Yeah.
And that you know.
And you run into people.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And you will run into someone at like the weirdest, like in the dressing room at the Banana Republic at the Sawgrass Mill outlets in Miami.
Yeah, that totally.
Is like a thing. And
as
sometimes
a native
you'll
feel Canadian, I understand. I know that well.
Totally.
Dolphin
there is,
Mall.
You know, there is something.
Wow, yeah.
Oh my God, that's still a thing?
It was when I was growing up. It was in the 90s. But I don't mean to interrupt you.
I know.
These guys. Continue.
No, but I think it's I've always seen traveling very interesting for me because for me, I love to connect with people. Of course, like the sightseeing and all that it's fun. But I always say, like, every time that I go to a new city, I try to actually interact with the people, and I try to ask for stuff that it's more hidden or more local, let's say. Mm-hmm. I'm always asking for those little stores where all the locals go, or the restaurants that the locals go. You should have seen, like, it, back in 2018, we were doing a road trip with Hans from San Diego all the way to San Francisco through the coast. And I remember us asking on our social media, guys, like,
oh my God,
could someone recommend something? Like, what should we do? We're driving, like, we're doing all this ride. And people started saying, like, oh my God, if you go there, you need to go to the Cheesecake Factory and you need to go to this wax museum. And we were like, okay, I appreciate it.
They were comparing. They put in the same sentence the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and Madame Tussauds. They were museums in the same category.
But I would say that there's a space for that, and people can just get excited about it. There's nothing wrong with that. But I mean,
that's right.
So more than that, for me was like, of course, that's where. If you're from Latin America, that's where you would go. I totally understand that. But for me, it was like, guys, no, tell me, like, if you lived in San Francisco, like, I used to go to this pizzeria that was, like, around the corner from whatever. And we ended up discovering, what we used to do is that I remember that we used to go to a restaurant and ask the waiters or the staff, hey, guys, like, if we want to find a good croissant, where should we go?
Sure, sure.
And they were like, oh, yeah. So we used to ask the Uber driver. And we ended up having the time of our lives. We're just places. We ended up in a neighborhood, like, very interesting neighborhoods that only locals go there. And it was like, for me, that's the way that you should experience a city. That's what works for me. I think that that's the best way, because you can actually get a sense of what the city's all about.
Sure.
Yes. No. And also, if you wanted to know, like, the best croissants in San Francisco are in Koreatown for some reason.
I know.
All right. So for those who don't know, right off Geary, next to Japantown is Koreatown. Yes. So, golf of Geary.
It is a thing.
Yes. Go ahead. You know,
what I find super interesting, because, like, talking about, like, the Madame Tussauds and the Disney World, like, everyone goes to Disney World, like, everyone in Guatemala goes to Disney World. And it's very easy to say, like, and to criticize people because why don't they go somewhere else? And it's kind of like, I wish they would. But living in a country like Guatemala, that is, like, just close enough, like, there's this tourism as a way to escape. It is not really about, I never see it really, particularly with families, being about, oh, we're going to, like, go and explore the world as much as we're going to take a respite from this. And when we were growing up, the Civil War ended in 96. So we grew up, like, in the middle of the Civil War in Guatemala. It was rough. Like, it was, like, bombs and that type of thing going on. Like, I remember, like, being kidnapped was a very distinct possibility. So, like, your parents taking you away for a couple of weeks was a respite for them. And I think that a lot of the people that we grew up with look at travel as a way of escape, as a way of, like, I'm going to give myself a break from this. I'm going to go into places where I'm safe and stop worrying for a while. And I think that kind of in that spirit is how we ended up deciding to come to the U.S. in a way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, both of you guys, for kind of setting a little bit of the table here in terms of what we're looking at, the environment. And I know you can only speak to bits and pieces, right? I'm asking you to describe a couple decades of life in a very short amount of time. But I think that's something that, you know, it's just important for people to understand.
It's not that many decades. Come on. It's just, come on.
Actually,
fair.
And actually, it was one of those vacations that we decided to move to the U.S. And it was like that, like, the first trip that we took together. And it was such a revelation because we were, like, all of a sudden coming as an engaged couple to the U.S. and, like, looking at the world through very different eyes. And it was, like, total revelation.
Mm-hmm. Well, so then when we look at, and I think one of the things that we do need to point out, you know, is that in many cultures, including the United States, but not exclusively, you know, travel is something that is seen as belonging to, historically seen as belonging to the affluent, belonging to those who had the means to do it. If not the money, then at least the time. And I think that's something to recognize, that we're talking about the privilege of being able to go out and about and be in the world. And that's something I don't think either of you take for granted, because it also, you know, gives you the opportunity to be leaders in the space, to show people here in North America, as well as in Guatemala and other parts of the world, that, you know, hey, we can be from anywhere and be anywhere, and that we belong anywhere.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is important as well, is for people to see some relatability there. And so I appreciate that as well, that you all do not hide any aspects of your identities, which is key to connecting with people, showing, hey, this is who we are. And in doing so, there's a way for people to connect on many different levels. And so when it comes down to, before we move to the move here, It seems to me, when you talk about the United States, when you were first coming and going on the trips to Disney World, which, again, as a native Floridian, I am from Jacksonville, which is 2 hours away from Disney World. But when I was growing up, that was one of the first places that I saw people who were speaking different languages, who were from places different than where I was from. So it did kind of, even in this microcosm of Orlando and theme parks and all that kind of thing, it connected me to the world at an early age. I had no clue of what it would be like coming to the U.S., this land of supposed abundance, where you've got all these different deodorant versions. I don't want to say flavors, but, or cereal flavors, a whole aisle of cereal.
We will come back with cereal. Don't get us wrong. We will bring cereal back to Guatemala too. Well, anything, the weirdest things.
Well, and I was going to say, then how did the U.S. How did you all perceive it in terms of a place as you were growing up and as you were visiting and in the run-up to moving here and staying?
You know, it was super interesting. Like, when I was older and I had already... self-identify as gay, I would say, it was an absolute day and night thing. And it was, again, like, it was this sort of escapism. And you would come, and I remember, like, coming with my ex-boyfriend back, like, forever ago. I was kind of, I don't remember whatever I told my mom that I was doing, but I left for 2 weeks and went to California. And it's not that you were doing anything that you wouldn't do normally. And actually, I don't know who said that the luxury in travel is experiencing the world like it was, like the ordinary things in the world, like it was the first time. Mm. I remember that it was like such a revelation, like, oh, we're doing these dumb things because you have to go to the CVS and buy the Band-Aids or whatever for your aunt. But I was able to be with my boyfriend without having to think about, it in general, like something that was not an option for me at all back home. And I was super young. I was maybe 18, 19, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it really allows you kind of like this distance from your worries. It's very much you leave behind, because you don't have to worry about, like, oh my God, I don't want to buy this here. I'm going to go to the pharmacy like three blocks over because I don't want the time to think, whatever. And when you leave that and you stop thinking about that, then you experience the world in a very, very different way.
Mm-hmm. I would say that for me, that's interesting, because I actually never traveled to the States with any of my ex-boyfriends. Not that that's, I had a lot, but I didn't.
But you did live here.
But no. Yeah. But now that I live here, it is that, like, it is what I totally thought it was going to be, because coming here as a tourist, I always said, like, oh my God, like, this is a place where I think that I could be myself, but I'm just going to be here for 10 days, 15 days, or whatever it was. So I didn't I didn't think about it that much because I was like, I'm not going to even put the energy there because I'm going back and I know that that's not the reality. But when I lived overseas and I lived in Europe also for a while, that's when I started giving permission to myself to start dreaming about those things. Because back in my country, back in Guatemala, I was like, I'm not going to even think about it because this is not a possibility for me. So in a sense, I was giving permission on those longer trips on the times that I lived outside of Guatemala. Then it was when I was giving permission to myself, on this place, I can actually be my true self. And because I feel like no one is going to judge me. But in Austin, Texas, that's where we are. I would say that even from the cities that I lived before, this is the first city that I actually feel like I belong, like I can call home. Mm-hmm. And I remember that we moved here in 2019 in January. Our first trip back to Guatemala was in October. So it was like 10 months that we were here. And I remember that trip that I felt that I was visiting Guatemala. Mm-hmm. I felt like a tourist in Guatemala. And that time when we came back, I remember that we landed. I was looking at the window of the airplane and I was looking at Austin when we were landing. And I had that feeling like, wow, I'm home. Like, I feel home.
I have such a clear idea, a clear remembrance of that day. But what I remember is that we opened the door to the house and it was an absolute mess because that trip was like came together like within an hour. And I was like so happy to see the mess.
Yes.
Yeah. We were like, oh, this our mess. This mess is home.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
But it was beautiful, honey. Beautiful. Yeah, what a beautiful mess.
No, but you know, like what Luis says, like, when you live in a place that really like goes against who you are, you don't even give yourself permission to consider the what ifs. And that is what travel really does a lot for you. And again, like that is through us traveling that we decided, okay, we're sick of this. And you don't really think too much about, like, there was this one time, I'll give you an idea. Even the dreaming of the things, if the thinking of the things is liberating, like there was this trip that I took when I was like 19, I was in New York, and I decided I was like in that place where like, am I gay? Like kind of confused. So I decided I was gonna like sneak out and I was gonna go to the Eagle, which—
Oh, wow. You went all in. Eagle. You went all in. Wow.
That's a—
because that is—
a classic night spot in New York for those who don't know.
If you know, you know. If you know, you know.
That's definitely right. Not for beginners. And no. if you know, you're gonna know why it's called the Eagle. But the thing is that I never even got to the Eagle because I couldn't find it. I did manage to go into Christopher Street in New York. And just that was so incredibly liberating. Like just being able to say, I'm gonna go to this place at night. If I don't come into the place, whatever, but I'm going to be able to even consider it. And that was like such a liberating experience.
Mm-hmm. But actually, no, yeah. Were you going to say something, Ernest?
Please, Luis, you go ahead.
No, yeah, I never thought, and thank you for that, because I'm just realizing right now, traveling for me has been always very important. Like that's something that I really like to do. I really enjoy it. But I've never realized that trip that we made to San Francisco, well, to California in 2018, it really changed our lives, because that's the trip when we decided, we were questioning ourselves, hey, we haven't even thought about having kids. Like, do we want to have kids? Because we kept seeing a lot of gay parents through all the little towns that we stopped, and we were the only ones looking at them.
The fancier the town, the gayer the parents.
Yeah, and it was like a realization that for me changed my life. Like I was like, okay, now I let's talk about it. Do we want kids? Because again, back in Guatemala is not, we couldn't even get married, and we didn't even have the option to think about do we want kids or not. But it was traveling what made it happen, and that trip was the one where we decided that we wanted to move to the States.
Yeah, in most of Latin America, queer parents, openly queer parents, are not something that you see every day.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. I think that whenever you travel, just you can expect the unexpected because things happen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so enjoy it. Like every time that you travel, be present, enjoy every moment, and try to just, I don't know, breathe the culture, the people, the food, like everything. It's just, like, for me, it's one of my favorite things to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really to avoid that. And there was something that is, there was also kind of hard to get over, because again, now there's everything. But when you were a kid, there was like, oh my God, Starbucks, so much fun. Let's go to Starbucks. And you could spend a ton of time like going to Starbucks, and you wanted to go every day. And it takes you a while to like get over that, because it's like you need to learn like, oh, I'm gonna go and find the nice coffee shop, not the Starbucks, because it was kind of like amusement park. The mall was kind of like an amusement park. So getting over that and like starting to find these places was like, oh, we're gonna get the coffee in the other place, in the next place. And we're gonna talk. The good thing, like traveling with Luis is the best, because he will talk to rocks. So particularly if they have dogs, like we go to places and he has more pictures of the dogs that he saw than the places. And he would talk to anything that has a leash. So it's easy because he
will. Anything.
Yeah, no kidding. But no, but the thing is that it's super cool, like to find, like, I've always been kind of weary of traveling with people, like not with my partner, obviously, but with more people. Mm-hmm. But it's not terrible if you have someone who is like curious. To me, kind of the match. I particularly don't care. I am not like on a schedule. You would maybe think that of me, but I'm like, oh, bless you. I'm happy just wandering around. And Luis is always like looking into what he should be looking into. So I'm happy to do that. And that works, because if you have two Taipei travelers, that sounds like a nightmare. But mm-hmm. if you have someone, if you are not the person who talks to people, like the strangers, you can just find, you find someone who is that person, you're set.
Mm-hmm. And you're amazed. I don't know. When I love going to places where I can talk to people. I truly, generally love. I'm very interested about the people that I talk to. Like, I want to know their stories. Like, I don't know why, but I think that it's the way that I leave the cities. And it's very interesting, because you get some really cool stories about the cities, and they're like, oh my God, we need to go to that place. We need to go to that restaurant that this person was talking about. People, they open up, you'll be amazed, and you always have that excuse that you're a tourist, and people will just open more. They'll be willing more to tell like stories just because you're a tourist. Mm-hmm. So you can use that tool.
As long as you're not one of those tourists that bring Diet Coke to Europe, but if you clear that bar, you're good. And you know what? When Luis first met my friends back in Guatemala, I was so annoyed, like, oh my God, this guy, he keeps asking people questions. And he kept asking questions, and I found it so annoying. And I was like kind of embarrassed. I'm like, oh my God, that is so invasive. Why is he asking questions? All this time later, now, like, oh, he actually cares about what they're saying. Like, good for him. I am not necessarily that. I am not that person. Honestly, I can talk about politics and whatever you can think of, but I am not particularly interested in the life experiences of people many times. I have learned to understand how that factors into the rest of it and to connect it, because I've been with Luis. But once I made peace with the fact that he'll go and ask questions to everyone and he actually means it, and he's actually interested, people can see that from a mile away. And people have this idea like, oh, we're going to France, but the French are rude. The French are not rude. The French are mirroring your invasiveness. So when you talk to people and you're actually listening, my observation and my experience, because I am not that person, but my observation of Luis has been, they actually want to help, and they actually want to share. Like, all of us want to share who we are and what we enjoy. So even New Yorkers, people have this idea that New Yorkers are like rude, and they are not rude. They're busy. That's a different problem.
Absolutely right. And I think that's a good time to kind of pivot a little bit into what you've created for yourselves and creating that space for others. I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head, Hans, when you were Hans. But sorry. Well, and that's the beauty of it too, man. You've got a German name, you're coming from a Spanish speaking country. That's globalization right there, you know?
Yeah. Like
we
I'm telling you, my NPR voice.
Exactly. But when we look at, you know, Luis's authenticity as he shows up, genuine curiosity, desire to listen to people, and they feel listened to, they feel seen, they feel engaged with in a way that is not transactional. I think like everyone wants that. It doesn't matter how busy New Yorkers are. I've had experiences where I've shown up with that same kind of energy and been taken to where I needed to go with, you know, people with brusque New York accents who have stopped and actually shown me something or been very helpful. They just don't have time for your foolishness, you know, but if you show up with a genuineness, I feel like they respond. Same thing in my experiences in France as well, particularly Paris, where I had friends say, listen, it doesn't help that you're American, but they've been rude to me too. And, you know, but people have still been quite friendly and engaging when I've shown up with that energy. It's, you know, and also depending on where you are, you have to read the room. If you don't know the language, just apologize and be like, listen, I'm the dummy. I don't know French, but please, could you help me? As opposed to swanning
in. People appreciate you coming. It's like coming into someone's house. Like, you have to respect it. And this is what people have this idea about, like, the ugly Americans, but that is when people are disrespectful. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're in a country, like, there was this lady on TikTok that I saw this morning. She was kicked out of St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome.
Is that one of your four dogs?
The Guatemalans. They're legal here, okay?
They're legal.
Yeah, they're legal. They're legal. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. But anyway, like, if you're respectful and you come,
Luis, no one said anything otherwise. Hands, go ahead, man. You were making a point. I'm sorry.
Hands. Oh, sorry. No, that when you come into places, it's like coming to someone's house. And if you come and you are like trying to impose your costumes, it's perfectly fine not to know the costumes. I don't think anyone is ever offended by, I didn't know that I was supposed to do these things.
Sure.
They will get offended if you enter a mosque with a gigantic sign saying to take off your shoes and you don't. Yeah, of course they will be offended. But in general, like, people don't expect you to know their costumes. They are very excited about the curiosity. And that's what we have found with the Sunday Afternoon Project, that people are very excited about sharing who they really are. If you actually want to listen, like we said, like, you share your story to create safe spaces for others to share theirs. Mm-hmm. But that is not literally a story in the sense that I'm going to tell you my life story. Is my story is like, this is who I am. I am a tourist. I am a foreigner. I don't speak the language. This is come, and I come in the spirit of curiosity, in the spirit of learning, of wonder. And I was hoping that you could share whatever it is that you want to share. Not for you to do what I say. Those are two different things. But to share what you want to share about this place. And that's when you discover, like, the weird croissant place in Koreatown.
Yes.
And you end up having the best cookies in your life. Just because people wanted to share the cookies. Like, no one wants to keep the cookies. They want to say, yes, please go to this place. I'm so glad that I can share it. Like, we all get excited. And this is, like, I am more methodical. Luis is more intuitive. But the way I see it is, if you want to think about this in terms of persuasion and, like, people want to be seen as experts. You're giving them authority. You're telling them, I don't know, you do. Please share.
There you go again.
Yeah.
You're telling them, please share. I love that. And I think, again, that brings us to to kind of what you do right now, which is create safe spaces for people to be themselves, to be vulnerable and open and connect in that way. And I think, you know, it's important because that is an outgrowth of your journeys. You moved to the United States to escape the homophobia that you were experiencing in Guatemala. You moved to a country that has bubbles of safety for LGBTQ people, I wouldn't say always has, but I would say as the 20th century kind of advanced, you saw that happen in parts of New York, in parts of San Francisco, and then by the time we got to like the late half of the 20th century, you saw it appear in Atlanta, Chicago, and other cities, to the point that now in this digital era, people don't even have to leave their hometowns necessarily. And still, there's plenty of homophobia afoot in the United States and other places as well. So no place yet is free of that. However,
no, for sure,
you're creating opportunities with the Sunday Afternoon Project and other, Saturday Afternoon Project.
No, it's Sunday Afternoon.
It's Sunday Afternoon Project. I'm wanting it 7 days a week. But I think, you know, the point is it's out of your own search for a space to be yourself. You are creating opportunities for others. Tell us about the Sunday Afternoon Project.
You're totally right about that, because the goal for the Sunday Afternoon Project is to live in a forever Sunday afternoon, that it doesn't have to be only Sunday afternoon. And the reason why it's called like that is because, you know how we're always looking for that Sunday afternoon, that because it's the time of the week that you can just get to relax, get to be you. You take care of yourself, you recharge, and you don't have to do any code switching. You do the stuff that you like. Or if you don't want to do anything, you don't feel guilty. But that's when you are your true self. So that's our vision, is that we're going to be living in a world that it's a forever Sunday afternoon.
So I love that, Luis. You're such a romantic in how you describe this. And that's what we need. It's what I try to do as a storyteller, is bring the romance of life. Not just romantic relationships, but connection with food and music and people.
Yes.
You know what? And it's something that is very easy to dismiss as unimportant. Oh my God. Like, there are people dying, Kim. It is important.
Yes.
Like, because there are people who need to live. It is very powerful.
Yes.
Like, there's this line, and there's something that I see happening a lot with people who are really empathetic and really think about the world a lot, that they get overwhelmed. And that is not fair. It's kind of one of those situations where put your own air mask first before helping the guy next to you. But what we have found around this is talking about your true self. We came to the US thinking of ourselves as gay men. Mm-hmm. And when we're here, we realize, oh, we're Latinos. Like, you don't think about yourself as, like, you don't think of yourself as a Latino if you're in Latin America. You just think of yourself as one of the bunch. So, and now we're Latinos and we're immigrants. And they're like, oh my God, we're, intersectionality central. But we had never, you never appreciate those things. Like, that's something else that's great about, like, going elsewhere, that you see yourself and what, like, coming back home. I think that coming back home is just as important as the travel. Like, saying, oh, interesting. This I miss. This is, because there's always something that we all have gone on a trip and say, I wish I could live here. I would move here. I want to stay. And sure, that's right. And probably it's true. But coming back home and realizing there are these things that are very specific to this place that are a part of me. And no matter how much you want to reject them, like, I am in a kind of weird place because I don't look Latino. I was not raised particularly Latino. But when they turn on the Selena or the cumbia, you will realize that I am indeed Latino.
Hey.
So it comes up. Actually, our musical tastes would reveal a lot about, like, Luis and I. But something else that we never thought about, and this is, we're just having a conversation with someone earlier today, like, in we never thought of ourselves as a mixed race couple, whatever that means, because in Guatemala we never had to, like, oh, it is way more complex, and the construction of race, for instance, is so different in the US than it is in other parts of the world.
Well, for those who are listening, just to give you context, Hans, his grandfather was from Austria. He was born in Guatemala, but he is white and he looks very German. Like whatever your average German, you would say tall, white, blonde. And I'm more Latin looking for whatever that means. I have the flavor, the color. What can I do? It's caramelo tentacion, I say.
Caramel temptation, baby.
Yes.
I was gonna say Gomez Adams, but sure.
Like, yeah. So that's what Kim means. Yes. So So just to give you context, that's why Hans is saying that it turned out that now that we live here, it turns out that we are an interracial couple for everybody. We're not both white. That I used to identify myself as white, and now I don't anymore because I'm in America.
We just keep giving people reason to hate us. It's been a very interesting thing to like then identify with people that it is you, like us and them. And back in Guatemala, we thought about ourselves as an us and them. And here we found that, oh, we are somewhat the them, not the us, for a lot of people. A lot of people do think that it's a super toxic construct back in Guatemala, and it is just as toxic here. The difference is that here we are on the other side of it, but it's terrible. And that really allowed us, and it's very interesting because I never thought much about immigrants, in the sense like never gave much consideration to immigrants. And here in Texas particularly, and the current situation with immigration is not great, and the next 12 months from here until the election are gonna be a nightmare of, let's not even go there. But the point is, now I get it. Having been on the other side somehow, or more importantly, having seen Luis slightly be on the other side more than I am, like, I can empathize so much better with the people who are really going through hell and just still want to come to the US. Like, they are literally walking on fire to come here. And it's kind of one of the things that the change of perspective really helps. And that's part of what we're exploring, that what we want to explore. Like, how do we make sure that these people find a place here? That they don't just see the smell of the CVS and think that that is enough, because it's not. Like, it's a much richer place.
No, and a lot of them, they just come and they become workaholics, and all they do is work, because they actually send money back to support their families. But at the same time, it's their lives. I mean, they're people. They deserve to feel like they belong here. Yeah. And that's what happens with immigrants. It doesn't matter from what part. If you're an immigrant, you need to find that sense of belonging, because... Yeah. That gives meaning to your life. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I didn't feel like I felt home here in Austin. I couldn't live like that. So for these people, it's like, for a lot of immigrants, it's very, very hard to find that sense of belonging. So we do want to help them out and give them the right tools to find it.
Yeah. And the reason that we're doing this is, I'm sorry. The reason that we're doing this, and like, a lot of this has been a realization about ourselves, like, oh, like what I was saying, like, we were on the other side of this back in Guatemala, and it's a lot of a nicer place to be, like, to be on the side of the oppressor or not the oppressed. And then we realized something, like people have asked me, oh, people in the US, so if you're from Guatemala, why are you white? And let's not get into what the answer to that is, but it's very hurtful that for most Americans, when they think of Latinos, they think of their help, the maids and the gardeners and the construction workers. And there's nothing wrong with that, but there's like so much more there. But I am guilty of doing the exact same thing back in Guatemala when I saw an indigenous person. There are indigenous persons who have PhDs. There are indigenous persons who have a lot of money, who have companies.
And a Nobel Prize.
A Nobel Prize winner. Yet, my idea of them was same. They are the help because they look different to me and they look a certain way. And I really wish that this journey
that's,
that we're on.
That's why traveling is important, guys. You need to travel. If you have the chance, travel, please, because it opens your eyes in so many ways.
It's funny because you kind of disabuse yourself of this idea that you are like this special snowflake, because you go and say like, oh, no, I'm not. But I really hope that this journey will one day take us back to correcting that mistake back in Guatemala, because it's very prevalent in Latin America. Like, it varies. Like, the dominant classes tend to be white, and that has implications of everything else of how society works. And going out there and seeing, even you can say whatever you want about race relations in the U.S., and that is actually what we're exploring with our documentary. Race relations are incredibly complicated, but they are out in the open. There are conversations being had, and at the end of the day, there are limitations for how some groups can or cannot move through the world, can ascend, can prosper, whatever you want to say. But the point is, the opportunities are there, and that is the whole thing about America. America is the place where nothing is given to you. Nothing is for you to say, oh, I'm going to get like this handout. Like, when they talk about that, like, what handout? Where? But what they will give you is endless opportunity. And that is only, and that is so, so different than basically every single other part of the world.
Fair. And sometimes you have to leave it to believe it. That is very true. Yes. And I lived outside the U.S. for over a decade. And there's still, even with even some of the handicaps that you come into the world with in American society, there's no ceiling. Correct. There's also no floor, but there's no ceiling.
Yes. Yes.
That's also true.
Yeah.
Yes.
No kidding.
So then in terms of the organization, you talked about the documentary, which, you know, I think is an amazing opportunity, not only to tell your story, but to also, or to share your story, because we're story sharing.
Yes.
But also to give people the opportunity to share theirs as well. But how are you working through the organization to offer people the space that we just talked about? What are some of the initiatives that you have going on?
The first step that we're taking is we're doing this exploration, and it is very much about our journey. As the insight came from our journey, like, sure, there's like some research. We have done all of the work, if you will. It took us a long time to figure out, like, there's power to this thing. So the next step for us is we're conducting this study, and we're creating these cohorts. So it's called the Story Sharing Workshop. And what we're trying to do is, how do we give the people at this stage, how do we give people, if the people who can, who have the power, who are in positions of privilege, how do we give them the tools so that they can create the spaces? Because that is the first thing that you can do. Like, I can train every person, every underrepresented person in the world, but if I don't have someone prepared to listen to them, then we have a problem. So what we're doing is we're doing this cohort. It's going to be 1,000 people for the 3,000 people for the first year. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that that's going to give us about 90,000 data points so that we can explore these behaviors. Because the most important thing that we found is that there's a lot of conversation about race and gender relations and all of those things. But what we have found is that underrepresented groups or underprivileged groups tend to self-select out of things because we are told that you don't belong there since you're a child. So you are told that Black people don't get to be CEOs. You are told that gay men don't get to be CEOs. You are told that men don't dance ballet. So you keep staying out of things. And that happens earlier and earlier. So by the time this, let's think of a big corporation, or a big corporation wants to have representation, so they want to have 10% of their company be Black. There's a lot to be said about that, but the problem is that Black people, for instance, or gay people or women are not knocking at the door because they were way earlier decided, why would I bother? And that is a problem that needs that needs to be addressed. So that's what we're trying to address. I think there's a lot of organizations addressing the other side of it, and God knows there's a lot to address. But what we're trying to think is, imagine if someone had told us, like this, I think about this a lot. If someone had given me the language to express who I was when I was, I don't know, 5, 6, 8, instead of having to go and find it in the world when I was 18, like I didn't have the language to describe myself as a gay person, my life would have been very different. I would have been probably made different choices. I would have probably knocked on different doors than I did. And that's what we're hoping, especially for Latinos, that these people, because the same narrative that you see about Latinos, for instance, being the help, we absorb that. Like, if you're a kid and you see it, and we lose our traditions, you see this a lot, that first generation immigrant parents don't even teach their children Spanish. Mm-hmm. And it's because they want them to speak English. Being like, there was this joke about what's
going on. They want to make their life easier. Just learn English because you are in an English speaking country. Yeah. And yeah, when you have that opportunity to open the world to them and to teach them two languages, why wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. There's even this joke about what is the one thing that is classy when you're rich and trashy when you're poor? Being bilingual. It is sad, but true. Like, you expect your mate to be bilingual. You yourself don't expect that of your children, but you expect your mate to be bilingual because she has to call her kids in Guatemala. That is such a sad state of affairs. So we want this person to say, this is a skill. Like, this is something that I can put to use, and to move away from these limitations. So the way we do that is to say, hey, no, I am a way more complicated being, and I know Spanish. I know more of the world than a lot of other people do. And I have something to say and something to share.
Mm-hmm. I love that, Hans. Thank you. I think, again, it's as someone who is singular in a space, in terms of my own TV show and media career, and as someone who has lived in Colombia, lived in Brazil, in South Africa, in Germany, in Canada, outside of my home community, you know, I definitely understand the importance of visibility. How I totally wish that I might have had someone as visible as me when I was coming along, and what that means to just my understanding of who and how I am in the world. So to create that opportunity for people, and particularly for, Latino families who are coming in as immigrants. And I say that too because, I mean, you have plenty of Latino families, especially generation after generation, that were born in what ended up becoming the United States and still have some of that same conditioning when it comes to just limitations on what you can do, you know? And I think, you know, now even with having some examples of, breaking out of that mold, there can never be enough. There can never be enough examples.
Yeah. Yeah. And what we want is that as we evolve, because this is the way we see it, like the Sunday Afternoon Project is about stories, and that is like the fun, interesting part, the part that we can relate. But what we expect for this to become is like really a prosperity engine, because the more people are out there signaling, this is what happened to the gay community. Like, the gay community prospered in as much, there were way more gay men out there telling us, oh, you can be whatever you want to do. We're kind of like Barbie. We want that from Latinos, for them to be as many Latinos of as many colors speaking Spanish proudly, because that will tell this kid, oh, I can be like that guy or that guy or that other guy. I can be whatever the hell I want. And that is the power. So the next generation won't think of, oh, I need to even consider my Latinidad. It's just there. It's as it is, like being left-handed. You just are. And that's what we hope. Because the people who can think of themselves like that, like this is just who I am, and it does not good or bad, it just is. These people have all of their energy, all of their creativity, they can use it for whatever it is they want. They don't have to spend all of this energy trying to appear, to code switch, or to disappear.
And something that we've learned in our journeys, how powerful a story can be. And how many lives you can change, how many lives you can even save. The power of story sharing, it's a power that we don't realize how much it is and how much it means to people. But at the end of the day, we're humans, and we're always going to be in situations that or facing challenges that immediately we're going to think, oh my God, this is just happening to me. And the reality is that no, it's not only happening to you. Like there's a lot of people that are going through something similar or the same situation, the same challenges, but we're going to face it in a very different way. We're a very different approach. If we start talking about it, if we don't feel ashamed of failure, if we don't feel ashamed of who we are, our history, a language that we speak, what we like to eat, like we need to stop hiding because the power of sharing, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's about like removing undue shame. Mm-hmm. And that allowing you to explore the world, to look at it, to look at the world and to see where you fit in without the precondition of like, I don't belong here. Like you do belong in places. And
we belong everywhere.
Most places.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Except in other people's business. So,
oh yeah. Almost everywhere. Almost
everywhere. Exactly. Actually,
no, actually, one of the key parts of the thing is that you have to be respectful. You have to create boundaries for yourself and be respectful of others, which is something that we sometimes kind of struggle with. Like, how dare you disrespect my boundaries? But you don't have any.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I would say that stems from the type of home training and child rearing that someone received. And not everybody got, parameters of healthy parameters of how to engage with a community. And I got that. My parents were teachers and I grew up in a community where any adult had the right to set a parameter in whatever ways, just to make sure, listen, hey, you are very much free to do and be who you are. And at the same time, there won't be any stepping over other people in order for you to kind of do and be what you need to be. And I appreciate that on the back end as an adult where I see like, oh my goodness, like, all the people, I had an amazing community around me to kind of mold and shape me in a way that not everybody else has. But that then means it's my responsibility to model that in a way that isn't castigating so much as just saying, hey, you know, this is the kind of structure that parameters provide, and it allows for the free flow of energy and growth and communication with that respect of everybody. So everyone then can feel fully self-expressed without feeling dominated or other, you know, oppressions.
Yeah, but and it really helps us, like story sharing, it really helps normalizing stuff. Mm-hmm. Humanizing us, like it's so healthy, like we should all do it. Like I remember when you told me about when you started doing your TV show and how you didn't see a lot of people like you doing a TV show like that, a travel show, like
and I
was gonna say, it's like we're back, like we're in 2023 and there's still no much of you doing the same thing that you're doing, but that's why we need to tell stories like that to show your work, because yes, there's a lot of people out there that they don't even dare to dream that they could do it, and the reality is that we can all do it. So Yes, I really appreciate that you do that. Yes.
Yeah, because that, and the last thing that I would add to that is that it's very easy to dismiss people in media, people on TV, people on the radio, musicians, whatever. And at the end of the day, like someone said to me, like the pop culture of today is the sociology of 20 years from now, but it is extremely relevant. Like it is like the key that ties everything together. It's like I keep in this infinite feedback loop of seeing people who are or are not like me. And thankfully, that's been changing a lot thanks to social media. Like, I don't think social media is like evil that people want to paint it as it is, but there's so much work to do.
Well, you know what? I think what we've got, particularly with social media, is the opportunity to engage in ways we never have before, to see people who don't have to necessarily submit to the same kind of gatekeeping that you had to prior to social media. Yes, it definitely has its shadow side with it when it comes to distraction, when it comes to disconnection. But at the same time, it's all in how we use it. It's a tool. And yes, there may be forces, quote unquote, that are involved in trying to take us away from ourselves. But we have story. We have heart. We have love. And that's what continually will bring us back to ourselves. And on that note, gentlemen, how can people find out more and even support the Sunday Afternoon Project?
You can go to your website, at sundayafternoonproject.com. You can donate if you want. You can buy a t-shirt if you want to. And you
and
can
also our social media, all of our social media, it's Sunday Afternoon Project. So we made it easy for everyone.
Yeah, or hello at sundayafternoonproject.com if you want to reach out to us. If you have an idea, if you have a story to share, there is a lot that is coming in the new year. We're very excited. We are here to listen.
Luis and Hans, thank you so much.
Hans, like the with Hans. With the back of your throat, Hans. Hans Reims.
Hans. Yes. Yeah, that's where he gets in trouble.
Hans.
I love it. Yes. There you go.
Luis. Guys, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor, privilege, and pleasure to talk to you both, to support anything that you're doing. I'm super excited to see where things go with the Sunday Afternoon Project. I 100% believe in the power of story sharing, the importance of the importance and impact of visibility, and definitely the power of belonging. So thank you just for showing up as fully self-expressed individuals.
Thank you for providing a safe space for us ever. Since we met you, we felt so comfortable. You truly provide a safe space. Thank you for the work that you do and for showing us that things are possible. And we are more than happy and we're honored to be on your podcast. So thank you for having us, Ernest. Yes.
Let's not forget NPR, which really has shaped the way we see the U.S. is super.
Totally.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. But thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you so much. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
Welcome back to the Fly Brother Radio Show. As Luis and Hans mentioned before the break, you can find out more about story sharing and cultivating a sense of belonging at sundayafternoonproject.com and at Instagram and Facebook, Sunday Afternoon Project. You can watch this episode of the Fly Brother Radio Show at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/c/flybrother. Fly with us by signing up for the weekly Fly Brother newsletter at flybrother.net and connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/flybrotherfly and on Instagram at flybrother. Please share any questions, content, or stories that help me help others thrive. And if you feel so moved, please share this podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Fly Brother Radio Show. Have a phenomenal weekend and an amazing week. Ciao, ciao.